Welcome to installment 224 of Sefer Mitzvahs from the Rambam. We will today be continuing the Rambam's discussion of the laws of purity and impurity, Tumah v'Tahara, with positive commandment 98, which we will be discussing the next few days as well. This commandment deals with the conditions under which food and drink becomes impure, Tumas Eichlin u'Mashkin. We've been learning all of the laws relating to Sefer Tahara, the Book of Purity of the Rambam, which, as we have been discussing, governs all of the different laws pertaining to ritual purity. These are not the laws governing physical cleanliness, but rather are purely a spiritual concept, as the Rambam characterizes them as a chok, a law completely beyond reason. We will see this expressed in some of the details of the law of Tumas Eichlin. There are certain types of impurity which can affect certain types of objects. Some types of impurity are so strong that any food can become impure. A weaker type of impurity of tuma can affect only truma, only the sanctified hallowed food which was consumed by the kohen. The law is that only certain types of food can become impure. For example, only something which is normally consumed as food can become impurified as a result of this law, as a result of this commandment. If a person should decide to eat leaves from a normally inedible tree, then the food would achieve the status of food. This object, the leaf, even though normally it would not become impure and would not be considered food, once the person thinks of it as food, then it can be considered food. This relates, incidentally, to the laws of sukkahs. That regarding a sukkah, the schach on top, the vegetable covering, which covers the top of the schach, such as the bamboo poles or the leaves of evergreens, must not be food. This is why, when food is hung from the top of the schach, from the roof of the sukkah, the place directly underneath this food is not considered to be under the schach, because the food itself, since it is makabel tuma, it can become impure. And anything which can become impure is unfit for a sukkah, unfit for the schach. Therefore, this food is also invalid for the use of schach. Another important law relating to the impurity of foods is that it must be mukshar lakabel tuma. There is a preparation which must be done to the food that only after this preparation can the food become impure. What is this preparation? The Chumash in Parsha Shmini tells us that liquid must be placed on the food. Obviously, any growing food comes in contact with liquid. For example, wheat growing in the field obviously is exposed to rain. However, only after it has been harvested and then afterwards exposed to some sort of liquid, then it becomes mukshar. It is prepared, so to speak, and capable of becoming impure. The Chinuch gives us the reason for this commandment. Why should it be that food only becomes impure after it has become in contact with liquid? The Chinuch explains that the Torah commonly looks at an object only after it has been fully prepared and completed. For example, challah. One is required to take a certain amount from the dough that one has prepared and gives it to the Kohen to eat. Today, of course, this piece of challah, the part which is separated from the dough, is burned up. But according to the law of the Chumash, and the way it was at the times of the temple, the challah was given to a Kohen to eat. Let's say a person should take a large bag of flour and decide to make bread. Can a person just take part of that flour and give it to the Kohen as challah? The answer is no. In order to give challah, it must be completely prepared. Although it does not have to be absolutely finished, that it does not have to be baked, nevertheless, it must at least be made into a dough. Only then is it considered complete enough to attain the status of challah. So too over here, the Chinuch says, food is normally washed off before being eaten. Therefore, the exposure of this food to liquid is a sign that it has already achieved the status of a food which may be consumed. Therefore, before the food has been washed, it cannot become impure. It is not mekabel tuma. This is because the Torah does not consider it to be completely ready to eat before it has been exposed to liquid or washed. But after it has been exposed to liquid and washed, then it is considered to be complete and prepared for use, and then it can become impure. We see in this law, incidentally, a very striking example about how the laws of impurity are completely unrelated to the laws of cleanliness. Here, we might think that when does the object become impure? If it's not cleaned, or if it's not washed. But it's exactly the opposite. If the article of food has not been washed, it cannot become impure. It's not mekabel tuma. When can it become tamei? When can it become impure? Only after it has been washed. We clearly see, therefore, that this law of impurity is purely a spiritual concept. It has nothing to do with the physical cleanliness of the food. In fact, adirabba, the opposite is true. Here, the cleanliness of the food will cause it to be able to become impure. The Rambam tells us in his legal code that not only water can prepare food to become impure. There are seven different types of liquids which can prepare an object to be mekabel tuma. These seven are commonly remembered by the acronym Yad Shachat Dam. Yad is the letters Yud and Dalit. The Yud stands for Yayin, or wine, and the Dalit stands for Dam, or blood. Shachat is composed of three letters. Shin for shemen, meaning olive oil. Ches for cholov, or milk. And tes for tal, or dew. The last word, dam, has two letters. A dalid, which stands for dvash, or bee's honey. And the final mem stands for mayim, or water. Any of these seven liquids, wine, blood, olive oil, milk, dew, bee's honey, or water, which fall on an article of food, will thereafter render this food roi lekabel tuma, capable of becoming impure. Although today we no longer care whether the food is ritually pure or impure, since we are all impure, spiritually speaking, as a result of our contact with dead bodies, and the absence of the ashes of the red heifer to purify us, as we discussed in those laws. Nevertheless, we find clear application of these laws in today's practice, in the life of everyday life of an observant Jew, in the laws of netilat yodayim, the laws of washing the hands. This applies in two cases. First of all, as we know, before bread may be eaten, a person must wash their hands properly before consuming the bread and saying the blessing al netilat yadayim if more than a kabeya, or approximately 2 ounces, of bread will be eaten. Then the blessing al netilat yadayim must also be said upon washing the hands. This is because of the impurity conveyed to truma. When the Kohen would eat the hallowed food given to him, truma, he had to ensure that his hands were pure, even though his entire body was already pure. Perhaps his hands had come in contact with a lesser degree of impurity, and then by touching the hallowed food, he would render it impure. Therefore, the Kohen had to wash his hands before consuming truma. Our sages declared that all Jews must wash their hands before consuming bread, and this they established in order that when the Beis HaMikdash, when the temple, would be rebuilt, this would not be a strange, unknown practice. The Kohanim will, of course, be eating truma and must wash their hands. But other Jewish people, non-Kohanim, also, in many cases, would be accustomed to eat their food betara, in purity, and therefore should also be aware of the laws of netilas yodayim, washing the hands. Therefore, this was established as a procedure for all times, that the hands must be washed before eating bread. In addition, the hands must be washed before eating any food which is dipped or dunked in one of these seven liquids we mentioned previously. These also require a washing of the hands, although it does not require the utterance of a bracha. All of these laws are very relevant, and we will, God willing, be discussing them further, and hopefully in their merit we will be able to put them into practice with the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Amen. Ken Yehi Ratzon. Thank you for tuning in to the daily portion of Sefer HaMitzvahs. For more information or to sponsor one of the installments, contact Sichas in English at area code 718-778-5436. That's 718-778-5436. And please join us again tomorrow.